6. Fears. There was no privacy in the shower, and not much water. I mean, all you could see in any direction was water, but I guess the salt would frug up the plumbing. So you had to push a button for 30 seconds of lukewarm, unsalted water, then soap up, push the button again, and try to get the soap off in another 30 seconds. Then do it again for your hair, without conditioner. I was glad mine was short. Elspeth was going to have the frizzies for a long time. She has quite a dramatic figure, narrow waist and big in the hips and breasts. Mother describes me as boyish, which I think is mother speak for titless wonder. Women built like Elspeth are always complaining about their boobs bumping into things. Things like boys, I suppose. I liked her, though. It could be a little awkward. The first thing you do when you meet somebody is cry together, and then strip naked and jump in the shower. But Elspeth was funny and natural about the latter. In the desert kibbutz, where she spent summers growing up, they didn't have individual showers, and the water was rationed almost as severely as here. Light blue used to be one of my favorite colors, but it does lose some of its charm when everybody in sight is wearing it. We left our civilian clothes in the donation box and put on space elevator coveralls and slippers. Then we went to the media center for lunch and orientation. Lunch was a white cardboard box containing a damp sandwich, a weird cookie, and an apple. A bottle of lukewarm water, or you could splurge a couple of bucks on a Coke or a beer out of the machine. I got a beer just to see Card's reaction. He pantomimed sticking a finger down his throat. The media center was one room with a shallow cube screen taking up one end of it. There were about 50 folding chairs, most of them occupied by powder blue people. With everyone in uniform, it took me a minute to sort out Mother and Dad. Card and I joined them near the front. The lights dimmed, and we saw a mercifully short history of spaceflight, with an unsurprising emphasis on how big and dangerous those early rockets had been. Lots of explosions, including the three space shuttle disasters that all but shut down the American space program. Then some diagrams showing how the space elevator works, pretty much a repeat of what we saw at the lottery winner orientation in Denver a few months ago. Even without that, I wonder if anybody actually ever got this far without knowing that the space elevator was, surprise, an elevator that goes into space. It was interesting enough, especially the stuff about how they put it up. They worked from the middle out, both ways, or up and down, depending on your point of view. Starting at GEO, the spot that orbits the Earth in exactly one day, and so stays overhead in the same spot, they dropped stuff down to Earth and raised other stuff up into a higher orbit at the same time. That way, the whole thing stayed in balance, like a seesaw stretching out both ways at the same time. We were headed for that other end, where the John Carter and the other Mars ship had been built and would launch from. They spent a little time talking about the dangers, sort of like a regular elevator, in that if the cable snaps, you lose. You just fall a lot farther before you go splat. Well, it's not that simple. Earth elevators have fail-safes, for one thing, and the space elevator wouldn't actually go splat unless we fell from a really low altitude. We'd burn up in the atmosphere if we started falling at less than 23,000 kilometers. Above that, we'd go into orbit and could theoretically, eventually, be rescued. But if the cable snapped that high, on our way to where the John Carter is parked, we'd go flinging off into space. Then that theoretical rescue would really be just a theory. There aren't any spaceships yet that could take off and catch up with us in time. There's a lot of dangerous radiation in space, but the carrier has a force field, an electromagnetic shield, for most of that. There are huge solar flares that would get past the shielding, but they're rare and give a 91-hour warning. That's long enough to get back to Earth, or GEO. The Mars ships and GEO have hidey holes where everybody can crowd in to wait out the storm. I'd read about those dangers before we left home, as well as one they didn't mention. Mechanical failure. If an elevator on Earth develops a problem, someone will come fix it. It's not likely to explode or fry you or expose you to vacuum. I guess they figured there was no reason to go over that at this late date. When we left home, a lot of my friends asked me if I was scared, and to most of them I said, no, not really. They have most of the bugs worked out. It's carried hundreds of passengers to the Hilton Space Station and dozens up to the far end for Mars launch. But to my best friend Carol, I admitted what I haven't said even to my family. I wake up terrified in the middle of the night, every night. This feels like jumping off a cliff and hoping you'll learn how to fly.